Hello, welcome to another episode of Everything is Canon, a CineLinks podcast, a podcast where we discuss the latest books and novels with the people who wrote them. I'm your host, Steve Duncan. However you have may have found your way here, thanks so much for tuning in. If you like that intro music, then you've got great taste. That's Sam Witwer and the Crash Tones. If you want to hear more of the Crash Tones, you can download their latest album, Revenge of the Crash Tones, on iTunes or visit samwitwer.com. Today we're talking to Mickey Daughtry and Rachel Lippincott, authors of the new book, All This Time. Coming off their New York Times bestseller, 5 Feet Apart, All This Time is a fairy tale inspired teen romance novel adapted by Rachel based on Mickey and her partner Tobias Ikonis' screenplay. It follows a grief-stricken Kyle Lafferty, whose life upends after a terrible accident. After seemingly losing everything, Kyle must find a way to put his life back together, and with the help of his mom and a mysterious girl named Marley, he just might find his way. But the road back is a bumpy one, and the universe isn't done with him quite yet. All This Time works very well because it asks you a simple question. In a world that doesn't always welcome dreamers, this story is asking you to do just that. Dream a little dream. Mickey, Rachel, and I talk about all sorts of things, including believing in fairy tales and true love during these troubled times, tuning out the white noise, process, and what inspires them. Remember, this is a spoiler discussion, so please, if you haven't read the book and don't wish to be spoiled, better stop listening now, but definitely double back after you've read the book.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. We have a really fun one today. I love it when I get to talk to more than one person. It's just something about a round table that sort of gets electricity going in the air. Today, Mickey Daughtry and Rachel Lippincott, who you may remember from the book 5 Feet Apart, are back with a brand new novel that releases today, in fact, of this recording, All This Time. Here's the summary. Kyle and Kimberly have been the perfect couple all through high school, but when Kimberly breaks up with him on the night of their graduation party, Kyle's entire world upends, literally. Their car crashes, and when he awakes, he has a brain injury, Kimberly's dead, and no one in his life could possibly understand. Until Marley. Marley is suffering from her own loss, a loss she thinks was her fault, and when their paths cross, Kyle sees in her all the unspoken things he's feeling. As Kyle and Marley work to heal each other's wounds, their feelings for each other grow stronger. But Kyle can't shake the sense that he's headed for another crashing moment that will blow up his life as soon as he's starting to put it back together, and he's right. We are very fortunate to have both Mickey and Rachel with us today. Hi, guys. Welcome.
Hi, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having us on.
Of course. This is launch day. It's very exciting. Everyone loves launch days. We just talked about how it's hard to get sleep sometimes on the night before, and you guys indicated that lack of sleep is sort of a normal thing for you both.
Well, yeah. I'm splitting time between screenwriting and novel writing, so it's a full-time, a double full-timer.
Right.
And I'm a nocturnal animal anyway.
Are you?
Okay. And I'm an insomniac. I think I'm an insomniac because I don't have time to sleep. I think there's the insomnia of, you know, the syndrome where you can't sleep, and then there's I'm blessed with too much to do, so sure. I don't get to sleep.
And your body just goes into fighter mode or whatever.
Fight or flight. And it's,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
Literally like adrenaline speed is what I'm always on. And I sleep at my desk sometimes. I do wake up with my face down on the, and you're laughing and I'm not kidding.
I believe you.
Comfortable office chair. It's ugly as hell, but it's comfortable because sometimes I just lean back in it and I wake up 30 minutes later like, okay, oh my God, we got something to do. We're on.
All right. Well, then
you crash.
Well, then let's get this question in. Then, what's the weirdest thing you've ever had stuck to your face when you woke up falling asleep at your desk?
My laptop.
Laptop.
I fallen asleep with my laptop on top of my, like on my head back, and my laptop like right, it just kind of leaned into me, and it was like boom.
Okay.
And maybe a Skittle.
No, yeah, I was going to say, probably.
Food is probably, I would have guessed food.
I definitely fell asleep once with gum in my mouth, and it was just, in my hair when I woke up, so.
Post-it notes are a popular one.
Your gum fell out of your mouth. Are you a pillow drooler?
No, it was sitting up, actively sitting up in a vehicle. So
God.
That's like when you have no control of your head, it either goes frontwards or backwards, and you never can tell.
Well, we're going to talk about process too, because I am fascinated with process. That is art to me, process.
Oh, great.
And so that just sort of one thing sort of sprung to mind there is because please, if at any point I'm wrong, correct me instantly during this conversation. You live in different states. I think, Rachel, you're in Pennsylvania, and mm-hmm. Mickey, you're in California. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm in LA.
Okay. And Rachel, how do you enjoy Mickey's, I won't call them strange working habits, but how do you guys with so writing a book together is not easy. Writing a book is not easy, period, but writing it with somebody else is, you know, adds that sort of extra challenge. How do you guys work then with this different time zones and different sleeping hours, and how did that go?
Yeah, definitely. That's a really good question. Well, Mickey has experience because she has a full-time writing partner, which right. she definitely will talk about for a bit.
Yep.
But yeah, so it was definitely a good experience. For us, it really worked because a lot of it was, you know, her sending me the screenplay. You know, we would touch base a couple of times. And then, you know, I would get down to the writing of the book adaptation. You know, always reaching out to her if I had questions. But yeah, I will say there were definitely moments where, like, I would wake up in the morning and maybe send her a message, and Mickey had not gone to sleep yet the previous night.
Like, it should absolutely be like 4 a.m. here. And I'm like, yeah, call me.
Yeah, for sure. Like, what?
Yeah. Right.
The process, no, what Rachel was saying about I have a screenwriting partner, Tobias Iconic.
Tobias, yep.
He knows I can't shut up about, because he's my crutch. I love him.
Sure.
And I like to say we're two legs in the same pair of pants, and without one, you don't walk well, you know?
So, right.
But we have a different process, which is creating mm-hmm. a story together. Rachel's and my process, it was more like she adapted my work. So it didn't require a lot of us together in a room or together on the phone coming up with story or coming up with characters or what they would say, because
right,
I'm sending
right.
things to her. It's right. just in a different format, right? Mm-hmm. So she's adapting it, but there were places that she was able to carry it farther than you can necessarily in a screenplay. And sometimes she would say, hey, listen, I can go this way or that way. What do you want? It's your story. Where do you want it to go? You
right,
know?
Right.
But most of that, I think, was taken care of already in the pages I was sending her. So mm-hmm. it wasn't so much
it was collaborative, but not necessarily
real time. But yeah, I was going to say, I don't want to say it's not collaborative, because it definitely is.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And like we talk about a lot, is by the middle of it, Rachel was pretty much reading my mind. She wouldn't have to call me and ask the question, because she would know if she asked this question, she knows what I'm going to say, you know, yeah, and she was putting stuff in the book that I was like, fuck yeah, how did you know that that's exactly what I would do, you know? And she's like, just because I know you now, and I know the way this story's going and the way that my heart thinks, she can hear it. But yes, and she can hear that. And so we didn't have a lot of active collaboration, I think I would say,
sure.
But it was definitely working together. Does that make sense? So, yeah. And then by the time it may have been active collaboration, we didn't really need it, because we had already, we worked the same way on 5 feet apart, you know?
Yeah.
So we kind of had the rhythm down,
right.
Of screenplay to novel, you know? So, mm-hmm. We kind of already had that language between us. And mm-hmm. this time it just was a little more in depth, because I wasn't literally on a movie set while she was adapting pages that I was sending her that day.
Right,
It's like, don't write that scene. We're rewriting it right now. And she'd be like, okay, on hold. You know, so if anybody wonders why the movie is so close to the book, it's because the book is the movie, and that's how we were writing mm-hmm. it. She was literally writing it as we were making the movie. So it got, you know, we got a real good pattern of working together between us, I think, at that point. And then this one, I was able to be more hands-on, but we already had the language.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And then I just trust her with what I send her, and know that it's not going to come back complete shit. You know?
Well, trust. I mean, trust is a huge part of it. I talked to a writing team a couple of weeks ago about a thriller book they just put out, and you know, again, similar to writing from different states, mm-hmm. and they had different schedules, just because, you know, one was a teacher, one was sort of a swinging bachelor, and, you know, like completely different schedules, and trust, that word came up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, yeah, so you're talking about the film, of course, that's 5 feet apart, which was made into a film. So based
the
on
film
your
film was made into the book.
Or sorry, yeah. So mm-hmm. based on your record, when does all this time come out? When's that movie coming out?
I hope when theaters open up again.
Yeah.
Because I would love a theatrical release, although we're creators, we'll take anything we can get. But yeah. I do love sitting in the theater watching one of my scripts. You know, Tobias and I had that with The Curse of La Llorona, and then we had that with 5 Feet Apart as well, where, you know, you're just sitting there and you're like, oh my God, I remember waking up with a Skittle on my face when I wrote this scene. You know, it's that kind of thing. It's the sausage behind, it's the inside baseball, and I'm watching it. It's amazing kind of moment. So I would like to have that theater moment. I guess I'm being selfish and saying I want the damn theaters open so I can see my movie in a theater.
Of course. Of course.
But timeline wise, I don't know. I mean, everything's in flux out here, and you never know. We haven't gone into production yet. We're just getting everything, because I'm working on something else for Lionsgate right now, so this one will come up right behind it.
Yeah.
Lionsgate bought the rights to the book, so we're just getting into the writing, I guess, phase.
Okay.
But what would be the writing phase, but I already have most of the screenplay, but we'll be rewriting it, we'll be developing it, you know.
So yeah, I mean, into that, 2020, kind of an interesting year, you could say.
For sure. Yeah, that's what you want to call it.
There's some weird stuff going on. Not a great year to release a book, that's for sure. Only because, especially for the authors who sort of like to hit the pavement, right, and get out and promote it and go to events and meet their readers and stuff like that. That's been a challenge. If there's been a silver lining, it's been, you know, there's been a lot more online events, a lot more panels online, different things. That's given it more of a much you can cast a much wider net that way, right? There's more of an international appeal to it in that sense. What has this been like for you guys this year, having to promote and maybe even write obviously promote and just sort of have a book come out in the middle of a pandemic, and then even just with, you know, with the goddamn United States being on fire, literally.
I mean, out here I am. Yeah. We are on fire.
Literally on fire. Yeah. Well, I've got friends in Northern California who've had to relocate, and
it's crazy. Yeah,
it's been awful. But so what's it been like for you guys? Just from a, you know, professional standpoint, what are some of the challenges that you guys have really had to tackle this year?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, I think kind of at the start of the year, right in March when everything was really happening, I had just started working on my third book, which I can't talk about just yet, but yep. Yeah, I just started working on my third book, and there were definitely days where I think for the first time maybe in my writing career, I just could not work. I just had days where like I completely shut down and just things were not getting put on the page. So yeah, that was, I think, definitely a bit of a struggle. I think just settling into the reality of, you know, COVID and quarantining and all of that was definitely something that impacted my personal work life. But yeah, I think releasing a book now is super surreal. I did throw a mask on and go over to one of my local indies today. So it was cool to see, you know, the book at least in a store, even though I couldn't do any event there. But right. Yeah.
I found it challenging, but also strangely, I don't even know if I'm allowed to say this, liberating to not do a personal book tour because I'm working on screenplays at the same time. So being able to just hop to my computer and do an interview or a podcast or a virtual book tour is much easier than flying somewhere. And I mean, I think it would have put a real crimp in my screenwriting career, you know? So yeah. it kind of worked out for me, you know, and the timing sense, you know, because I would have been turning down screenwriting work because I would have been on a book tour, and that is, you never want to turn down work. So it kind of met in the middle for me. So I was not that I'm happy about anything that's going on. I'm not, I would have gladly gone on a book tour, but I would have had to turn down some jobs to do it.
It sounds like you really appreciate the position you're in.
I'm so blessed.
Yeah.
I think every day I am on my knee. No, I'm not literally, but every day I'm pinching myself. I'm pinching myself with this blessing I call my life. You know, I've had, I get opportunities that I am thankful for all the time.
Right.
I'm happy to be able to make a living doing something that I love. Even making that living makes you not love it so much anymore. Because suddenly it's not joy, it's work. But you know,
Yeah, I you know, you talk to enough people in any sort of artistic endeavor, and there are days when it feels more like a job than a, you know, than a, for sure. That's part of it. I think that's they call that the grind, I guess, right? Or
it is.
Having deadlines is no fun, of course. But anytime you sort of try and box in creativity, it can get hard. The thing about this year too, that, you know, especially with people who write creatively, emotion is such a big part of it, it's going to be interesting to see the books that have come as a result of this year, the stories that come out of this year, right? The ones that are just being thought of now or starting to write now and come out in a year or two from now. That's what's really going to be interesting to see, is what types of stories that, you know, you folks are churning, you know, right now amidst all this direness out your front door. Is that something you guys emotionally, has this year stifled creativity as far as you're concerned? Or
no, not me. Never. No. I don't go outside anyway. I live in a cave.
Right.
I am always inside my own mind.
Yep.
I live probably more in a dream world than I live here. I kind of come out to process what I've done in the dream world, if that makes any sense. I know I sound like, but I this is just the truth. So the only thing that stifles my creativity is not having time to work on what I need to do, you know? Right. So it's having a bottleneck. So I get panicked of the things I need to get out, or, it's having, just not the elbow room, you know. I need the room to breathe, and I need the room to let them come out. But any external factors except for things that suck time or affect my time don't really affect my creativity. I find when I'm, and this is the truth, and it's unfortunate, and I'm thankful for it, but it's an unfortunate thing that, when I'm my most productive, like when I'm really working on something, that's when I get a ton of ideas. Mm. So it's almost like the gate is open.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And things are flowing, and I get really frustrated because I'm like, boom, 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 here come four new stories at me. And I'm like, I can't listen to you right now. God, please stay. But I can't listen to you right now. I'm working on this. And so, and Tobias has a really funny thing. He's like, plant it, let it grow. It'll become a tree. Go pluck it later. But you got to let this go. You can't deal with this right now. Mm-hmm. So he's very good at keeping me on track of the task at hand, but I have notes and notes and ideas and stories, and they keep just, blossoming and sprouting as I'm working on these other things. And I think the only thing, so my creativity actually comes, it's a blessing. It's a two-edged sword, I think. When I'm the most busy, there's a part of me that is the most creative because it's plugged into something that is generating stories. But when I'm the most busy, I'm also the most frustrated because I can't tell all those stories, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. Yeah. Rachel, what about you? Like, with all the stuff that's going on, just, you know, even besides the pandemic and the political strife and everything that's going on, is there any part of that that just, you wake up and you're like, you know what? Fuck, I don't want to do anything today.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Yeah, I think sometimes definitely. And you're right. I think it's going to be really interesting, I guess, in the year or two after this to kind of see the books that were churned out during this pandemic. But I think another element of it is, like, I know I sit around a lot of the time and I think about the good old days and I think about the places that I would have gone and the things that I would have done. So I guess there's also that element of that where we might also see some books that, you know, were, you know, born out of this hope to be, you know, at the beach or traveling or going on all these adventures that, you know, we can't really quite go on at the moment.
Well, it's interesting too, because like with all the, you know, limitations that are being applied to creativity, from a bureaucracy standpoint, the history, I know you guys know your history, you know, the true revolutionaries come from the writing side of things.
Yeah. Art.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we count, absolutely. And I'm counting on you guys to get that stuff out there one way or another. And, you know, and oftentimes it's fiction that does that, right?
Like, absolutely. Because the heart has to change before the mind can,
yeah.
You know, it has to come from inside, and it's a way, and art gives us that. I even hesitate to call myself an artist because I look up to so many true artists that they make me feel like a grain of sand, you know, on the beach compared to them. And so those are the people
like Kazuo Ishiguro or Gabriel Garcia Marquez, you know, Margaret Atwood, they changed mm-hmm. my heart. And so I hesitate to put myself in that situation, in that category. But as I was saying, the heart has to change before the mind can, I think. It's my opinion. And when you lead from there, it works itself out in a way that is natural. And sometimes it takes time and it takes strife, you know, and some fighting to get things right. But I think as long as our hearts are changed, our minds will eventually follow. I'm all over the place today. I'm sorry.
No, that's absolutely true.
I appreciate the Atwood, the Canadian follow-up there. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, hello. Hey, Esther the Wonder Pig. Esther's the Canadian, too. We were out there. Tobias and I were out there last summer spending some time with her because we wrote a screenplay about her. But, yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
Side note.
Very, a great side note. It dawns on me you're very quotable. Even just talking to you right now.
Yeah, if you can find, string together a couple of words from there. You can't quote a 30-minute monologue.
No.
She said this right here.
Sure, but you know, to that point, and I got to be honest, I almost have to say, like, I thought the best part of this book was your note at the end, which I thought. Which I thought was beautiful, and I'm going to one quote too that actually made me say. I believe I even said. Fucking yeah, or something, right? After, right? quote, it keeps me alive in a world that doesn't always welcome dreamers. And I was like, mm-hmm. fucking right, Mickey, when I read that line. And I've thought this before about author's notes, and I really thought this belonged at the beginning of the book. And,
thank you. But it would have given away the book.
Yeah,
for sure.
Spoiler potential.
Maybe a little, maybe a little bit, but I also think, you know, a book like this, and we're going to really, you know, we're here to talk about all this time. Let's not forget that. It's a fairy tale, you know, inspired love story.
It is.
And your note, which is just, it's beautiful from start to finish. I think it really would have put people in the right headspace. Now, a lot of times I think it really would have, with fairy tales and love stories especially, I don't do this a lot. And I was reading some reviews for this book. Mm-hmm. And I got it. Like, some people just don't fucking get it.
Don't get it. They don't get it. Yeah.
And it's dumb things. Like,
I would never do that. How dare he? And I'm like, oh, it's a fairy tale.
Or
it's
like, yeah, like Marley is Kyle's dream girl. I'm like, yeah, no shit.
But
like,
yes.
like, but in a negative, they're saying that. I'm just like,
yeah, I know. Oh. It's like, whoever gets their dream girl, well, you do.
And then, of course,
dream,
the best one is like when they say, oh, this book is not 5 feet apart. I'm like, no shit.
No, but funny story. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, no, you go. All I was going to say was that, like, you know, your note is so beautiful and inspiring. And I think it, you know, puts people in the right headspace. And I feel like some of these readers who are clearly lacking imagination, it's almost like, I feel like you shouldn't have to do this because you shouldn't ever change or have to dumb down anything. But at the same time, I wonder if you got to, like, today's audience to me is so limited in scope, like the readers. I feel like you have to, like, almost massage them a little, warm them up a little bit and say, hey guys, like,
at least feed them the tone of here's what you're getting into. And so
like, get that part of your brain closed, turn off CNN for a second.
Yeah.
Open the part of
we're
your brain.
We're going to feed you some fluff.
We're going to give you pure gooey goodness.
Yes.
So just deal with it, you know? So
yes.
That's all. So anyway, sorry, what you were going to say, something great probably, and I interrupted you.
No, I interrupted you trying to say something inconsequential. I don't remember what I was going to say. It didn't matter. I'm going to lead into what you were saying there. You know, I think, and this occurred to me because I was watching BuzzFeed. You know, I followed BuzzFeed on Instagram, and some of them are horrible. But they had this neighbors doing kind things for each other. And I remember it was yesterday and I was watching it and I was like crying because I'm a sap and just putting that out there. Yep. And I, but especially if you read my author's note, you'll know, oh God, this girl is squishy.
No,
you know?
It was great. It was great. I love it.
Thank you. Yeah. And so,
just waiting for Rachel's. I'm waiting for Rachel's notes. That's all.
I'm watching her. I'm watching this video on BuzzFeed, and it occurred to me in this moment that we're being fed. We reflect as humans what we absorb, what we take in, and we're reflect we are instinctively reactionary to our surroundings, to our feed. Like if you imagine us as, you know, we're feeding on this Instagram feed, right? Mm-hmm. And this neighbors loving neighbors, and you guys should look it up, because there's a man helping an elderly woman back to her house and getting her inside and pulling her garbage can in. And then there's a man who runs up to another neighbor's house and puts out a fire because he can't get into the door. And there's things like that. And I'm like, if we were fed a diet of love and joy and generosity and kindness, that is what we would give back to the world. Mm-hmm. And we are fed anger and strife and aggression. And that's what we're getting from people. And it's our knee-jerk reactionary instincts to be what we see and to fight what we see, or we will live up to or down to the expectations we are given, mm-hmm. I think. And yeah. In this time, I want to be given things that make me want to be better and good and happy, mm-hmm. that make me cry from joy instead of from agony. And to me, this book is that. That's the point I wanted to get to. It is cotton candy. I'm not ashamed to say it will make you fucking feel good if you let it. And that's what I wanted with this book, with this story, what I wanted to bring to the world at a time when it fucking sucks sometimes. And all we're getting is hate and anger and like I said, aggression. Give us some fucking bubblegum, please.
Mm-hmm. Hear, hear. I'm gonna clap.
Lana, yeah, me too. Me clapping? Yeah.
But it's also, you know, it's, yeah. And I don't want to diminish the work, because it is more than bubblegum.
But
to get to get that sweet taste at the end, you have to have some bitter, and that it is all in there, you know? So that's why I think it's an important book at this time. I think it may, like some reviews say, it's unrealistic. Yeah, sure it is. Yeah, it is. You know why? Because we need to dream right now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
Because reality fucking sucks. So give me a dream.
And I think, you know, in a little bit too, because there's a bit of a YA renaissance right now. And I think,
oh yeah,
and,
no.
And, and sure. I think that, like, you're right. And I think there is, there's a hunger for it. And that's reflected even on the business side of it as well.
I think we don't know. Yeah. We don't often know that we're hungry for it. And I, you know, right. it didn't ring that bell for me until I saw that BuzzFeed and I said, why don't we get all of this every day?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why is this not what we wake up to and what we go to bed to? And the news can filter in, but it's this constant mainlining of pain.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, and I think we react to that in kind.
Rachel.
Sorry, I'm popping a Diet Dr. Pepper. Sorry about that. Yeah,
do it. I love Dr. Pepper. Mm-hmm. Cherry though. Rachel, let's talk about then. We're talking about all this time. Let's talk about love. Let's talk about a love story. You know, when writing or adapting, what's important in a love story? Like, what do you, you know, when you guys are working through it or talking to each other or however you do it, you know, this has to be there because of X and Y. And if we can't fit that in the other thing, that's okay because we have X and Y. What's vital to a love story? And what's maybe less important?
Oh, gosh, that's a really good question. Oh, man, I think something that's super vital, and you really see this in all this time, is just, I think and also 5 feet apart, is the ability, you know, to meet somebody and feel completely understood, and then also have the ability to, you know, grow and change and kind of become really the best version of yourself. I think that's a special kind of magic. That's definitely something that I always look for.
That's a big part of this book too, for sure.
Yeah,
especially with Kyle. Yeah,
mm-hmm. A huge part of that. Yeah. And I think that was definitely something that I saw in both of Mickey's screenplays, and just absolutely fell in love with. Just, you know, Will and Stella, you know, when they first meet, they're at odds, and then just kind of the magic of them meeting in the middle and growing and changing and leaving such a positive impact on each other's lives. And I think that's just really the magic of romance and love stories, is just the beauty of, I guess, the story itself of, you know, two people meeting and having the capacity to just completely change lives and change each other.
Yeah. Same question, Mickey.
What's that? So,
what's vital?
Again,
what's
vital? I got lost in the answer.
Yeah. Which was a great answer, by the way. Mm-hmm. What's vital? What's absolutely necessary when you're writing? And this is like not just an emotional question, but even just a mechanical question is too, right? Like what's vital in a romance when you're telling a romance story, and what's maybe less important?
I think, and this is going to sound hokey, but I think you have to have a love at first sight element. And the way that people want to poo-poo that, I think there's a little bit of love at first sight in every relationship that you see happen, mm-hmm. because someone has that initial attraction. Someone wants, when with Will and Stella, Will wants her before she wants him. So he has the impetus to go after her. And I think that's a kernel of love at first sight. In this book, the same, in this story, any of my stories, you're going to find a love at first sight element, mm-hmm. because I believe so strongly in it. I believe vital to a love story also is truth in the character's journey, truth in who they are, even if you're telling a fairy tale version of a tragic love story. There's a truth that has to underline all of that so that we can follow it, so our hearts understand what we are putting out there. I think we listen, like I said, I think we listen with our hearts and our minds catch up later, and a love story speaks directly to that artery. It's like pumping a drug right into that vein and saying, here, listen, here I am, you know. That's what I think is vital to that. That sounded like total shit.
No.
Think I know what I said?
I'm going to edit that out. That was awful.
Go ahead.
No, God, no. We're going to slowly now sort of creep into the book more in detail. So I just so you guys know, I do post spoiler tags. So like we're going to.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Talk about it, whatever you need to talk about.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah. Because I'm not smart enough to talk about it without spoilers. So. And I don't.
We are not either. We're finding.
Well, that's it. Yeah.
We got like so surface level.
It's really good. Please read it.
Well, that's it. You kind of when you know it's tough to. Yeah, I just find it hard to talk about stories without talking about. Well, let's talk about what we're talking about. All this time doesn't have a villain. The villain in this book is pain. Right?
Yes.
Drama, mm-hmm. loss, grief. That's the villain.
It is not a traditional good guy, bad guy story. Absolutely.
Right. I mean, sure. Sam's kind of a dick, but he's not, he's trying to do the best he can with what he's got with everybody else. Right. I wanted to hate Kimberly, but
I know,
she kind of just like, surprises you at the end, mm-hmm. and you're like, oh, God damn it, now I like Kimberly.
Ah, fuck. Why is she so nice? Yeah.
Yeah, but so just talking about like the love at first sight thing, and I agree, I love, it's so refreshing because I was, it's like when I read a lot of YA and you kind of get tired of like the villains to lovers trope,
mm-hmm.
All these ones that you see a lot. And that's drama, and drama, I guess, makes for a good story for sure. But I think you guys have proven you can find trauma in other ways, and it doesn't have to be that tired old thing. And you're right. I'm with you. I'm a sap, and I just once in a while really love a love at first sight.
Mm-hmm.
Have them be true to each other the entire story, and then have them, of course, face challenges and difficult times.
Right.
But let's revel in the strength of love for an entire story.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I hear a lot about, and you learn a lot when you're writing and when you're in it, that conflict. And I would like to postulate that conflict does not have to mean fighting. It doesn't have to mean
right.
mm-hmm. conflict as the Webster's definition. It could be, I want this set of lungs, but I want to be with this boy. And that is your conflict. There is no fighting for that. And so in that sense, that is your villain. Like the villain in 5 Feet Apart is CF. Like this is a Romeo and right. Juliet. I structured that as a straight up Romeo and Juliet for the modern times. And the CF is the villain, mm-hmm. So keeping them apart. And then with this one, I would say it's a little more abstract, but the villain is reality.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's the reality of, because now we're talking spoilers, he's living in a world where, if you think about the structure, when you go back and read it, if you've read when you think about it and if you remember it, Sam is not there with him. His mother is not there with them. Kimberly is haunting him only because he's opening her eyes and his eyes and seeing her and bringing her into this world. So that he's building on these, based on stories that Marley is telling him, right? So what he brings into that world is Sam is, his conflict there is Sam is the part of him that's telling him, you can't let go, you can't move on. You right. have to love Kimberly forever because you promised it. That's Sam's role right. in the first part of the book, because that is that part of Kyle's psyche communicating to him. Don't, you made a promise. Don't let go. You said you love her forever. This is what you know. This is what you wanted. This is what you said you always wanted. Then you have Lydia, his mother, who is the other part of his consciousness.
I love Lydia.
Oh my Same. God. I love Lydia. Lydia was always yeah. one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So Lydia is his good angel, basically the good, the part of himself that wants to listen to what Kimberly was trying to tell him, that wants to cut the ties, that wants to move on. Mm-hmm. And so he has these two opposing forces in the coma world mm-hmm. that are, that we think are Sam and Lydia. But if you go, if you really think about it, they're just this all just Kyle
right.
creating. And he's, yep. he's working his way through his pain that turns out not even to be real, right? Mm-hmm. So he's working his way through this pain by building stories around these people in his lives and what they would be in this world did it exist.
Yeah, a message received, because I remember reading it, especially when you get to the part about Sam, you know, missing the tackle and being the reason mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. I really thought a lot of that was, you know, that was a way to keep Kyle from moving on.
Right. Yes. And that's keeping Kyle from moving
right. on. Right. And that control aspect, right? And then, mm-hmm. and you even say at one point, you know, you're the one bringing Kimberly into this mm-hmm. because you have a problem with letting go and loss of control and, you know, the other stuff. Rachel, what was, it's easy for me to look at, read this and say, well, the inspirations are clear, but not always. And same question for both. Like, talk about the inspiration for this story, other than, you know, the love, other than love. Was there something specific? What was there any bit of literature, you know, other, you know, Man on the Moon and stuff, but what was the inspiration? What felt inspirational to you?
Ooh, that's a good question. Well, again, I wrote it off of Mickey's screenplay.
Yeah, yeah. So, no, yeah,
so yeah,
no,
yeah, 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 for
but,
sure.
But you contributed some, right? So
no, definitely. Yeah, yeah. That's a really good question. I think, just base inspirations. I really, I obviously love this story. I loved the meeting of Marley and just kind of like Mickey was talking about earlier with, mm-hmm. you know, just the whole love at first sight. You know, that spark that initially happens when they first meet in the cemetery. That was something mm-hmm. that I really loved. But yeah, then I also just kind of loved the growth that we saw with Kyle all throughout it. I think I'm always really fascinated by, you know, grief and pain and suffering and, you know, the change that can happen as a result of, you know, experiencing it. So that was definitely something that really stood out to me. When we were just talking about this right now, I remembered, Mickey, do you remember the scene that we kind of added in a little bit closer to the ending where, you know, Kyle wakes up in the hospital and he tries to get out and tries to find Marley and he ends up collapsing in the elevator.
That was in the very first draft though, remember?
Yeah.
But we put it back in. But what were you going to say about that?
No, yeah. I think when we added that scene back in, I think that right there is just like the magic of this story in a lot mm-hmm. of ways. Like, yeah. like the idea that like, you know, he meets Marley, he has all of these experiences and then he is willing to just completely risk it all in order to, and like to find her again, to find this love and to find this thing that he knows is real. And I just think that probably was what really inspired me in that this story.
Yeah. And that was that, like, I never felt once, you know, even the in the third act, you know, even as much doubt had been created, I never felt for one second that Kyle would ever stop believing that Marley existed.
Absolutely.
Like never. Right.
No.
In spite of zero evidence, even after that awful scene where he goes to the house.
Yes.
And that, that dad,
all of lost dad. Moment. Yeah.
He's lucky that wasn't like, I mean, maybe the dad was like
a right-wing nut with a gun, but
oh god,
he's lucky that that dad didn't.
It all depends on the sign in the yard.
It's true. If it was a Trump, yeah, if it was a MAGA guy, then yeah, like, or those, well, remember that rich couple that had the guns? He's lucky it wasn't that, you know, god, imagine, put yourself even in that position of a, some guy knocks on your door and wants to talk to your 10-year-old daughter. You'd be like, what?
No, for sure. And yeah, and I think that's really like what I loved and really was inspired by this entire story was just, you know, when he does wake up and, you know, everybody is telling him that, you know, this love that he had, like, wasn't real. It didn't exist. It was all a dream. All of these different things. He fights for it. He fights for her and he fights for them. And
he's fighting for himself. His new self. Right. Mm-hmm. He seems so relieved in a way to me. I really thought like to be this new Kyle, like,
he grew up.
Right.
Yes. And that's the point of the story is he grew up.
And he seems super stoked about it, though.
Yes, yes. Yeah, he realized what a child he had been. Yeah. And his friends were trying to tell him, catch up with us.
Right.
You know, he took a step out of his reality.
Yeah.
And went into a place where he kind of was in this cocoon wherein he grew up, you know, and then he comes out a different person to himself, to them. Suddenly he's the Kyle that they always knew he could be, but it happened overnight, basically, in their minds, because he's not been here. I'm glad you called out the man in the moon. That's my favorite.
Well, that's gonna get to the part where I cry. But first we'll get to that. You know what, fuck it, we'll do it right now.
Inspiration.
So a lot of times when I'm reading, I actually listen to music. I don't know, it's
weird. Oh, I do.
I'm able to do it. Some people can't, and I get that, but I'm able to listen to music at the time. And so I was listening to, I've been listening to a lot of Buffalo Springfield lately. And so at the end, when Kyle starts to recite the Man in the Moon story back to her.
Yeah.
And Expecting to Fly by Buffalo Springfield was on at the time.
I want to write that down and listen to it.
Yeah. And yeah, I just started bawling.
Don't you love those synergistic moments when the world comes together? Let me tell you something. I say this all the time. I sound like a crazy person. And I know that if you lived in my head, you would think, how does she wake up every morning when she sleeps? But it's, I don't believe in coincidence. I don't. I think you were listening to that song and reading that passage at that time because it was supposed to be on at that time to give you that moment. Because I always think that the universe and the world around us and this world and the next world and things after, because I do believe in an other side, obviously, you're reading a book that's basically about my belief and where we can go in our minds when we let ourselves travel. And when we do, like, I think they're always trying, it's all this universe is always trying to teach us something, and it's tapping us on the heads, it's tapping us on the hearts, saying, god damn it, listen to me, I'm trying to fucking show you something and you need to know this because this will change your life. And it may be something small, like you reading this fairy tale that I wrote, Man in the Moon, for this book, and that song is on at the time. I don't think it's a coincidence. I don't. I will always say, I don't care. You can laugh in my face. I don't believe in coincidences. I believe they're all learning experiences and things that we're supposed to take notice of. I'm so glad you called out the Man in the Moon was particularly fun for me. If I can, is that okay? To write, because, I wanted the fairy tale within the fairy tale. And that I wrote that in one sitting. I was like, I don't know what this is going to be and how the hell am I going to convey to Kyle exactly? Cause I needed to tell a Marley story in the Marley book to an exhibit of what he's listening to this whole time, you know, because as a reader, you're going to be like, what kind of stories is she telling? Like, you know, he says that she tells fairy tales and love stories, but we want to hear one. So I was sitting there and it just, like I said, it plugged in and I'm like, and I just started writing it. And I was like, where's this going? Like the way typical when I'm flowing is the way it happens. And then I'm like, oh my God. And the moment that Kyle says, oh my God, it's the Man in the Moon. I was like, oh my God, it's the Man in the Moon. And my hands are writing as this story is coming alive inside me, this fairy tale. And I was, and when I sat down to do it, I said, I can't write. I've never actually written a fairy tale. And now I'm like, I want that to be a children's book. Like, I want Man in the Moon to be a children's book, because it wrote itself from that place that I'm always talking about in interviews inside me, where things are alive in a way that they're not alive here, and they're safe in a way that they're not safe here, and they're loud in a way that they're not loud here, because I think a lot of us can't hear those little voices inside us screaming for attention.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Time is ticking away, and I don't want to...
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize. Well, I just don't want to keep you guys for too long.
I got it. I got you as long as you need me.
Okay. one of the things, because it is a contemporary book, and all the characters felt just really, you know, just really contemporary to me, especially like Dr. Benefield was great.
I love her. I want to marry her. She's my crush in the book.
Okay. Lydia was mine.
Oh my God, let me tell you something.
Let's talk about Lydia, actually.
Because
that's a really, you know, again, this book is, you know, the villain is, if there's a villain, it's trauma and pain you know, those, the middle act two where, you know, where he's really struggling, you know, Kyle, he's, you know, living, won't leave the basement, you know, is probably smells bad and, you know,
all that stuff.
And that's when Lydia goes into mom mode, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And she's an interesting character too, because she's suffered as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, she has that great line, and I don't remember exactly what it was like, but she's like, you know, I had to push aside my grief because I had
a
son to take care of. Like, she's just pure mommy mode. And talk about just sort of like, where did Lydia come from when you were sort of thinking of, well, he needs a mom, obviously, or just a parent. And
I wish I could talk about it that way, but it doesn't. Like, when you were talking about inspiration, like Rachel was saying, you know, where the inspiration for the story itself came from, they just kind of download to me.
Okay.
They come from like a scene or a moment, and it actually Lydia and Kyle were the first characters in this story because I had this moment where and the only way I can describe it is I can see them, but I can't see them. They're not hallucinations. I don't want people to think, oh my God, she hallucinates things and she's not allowed to, she shouldn't be allowed to drive a car. That's not the way it is. But if you close your eyes and imagine, and this, I think I described this the other way because it's so clear to someone else, Rachel, when we were on another call, it's like, if you close your eyes and imagine your mother bringing you a plate of warm chocolate chip cookies that she's just pulled out of the oven, you really can kind of smell them and you can absolutely see her, but you don't see her in front of you. I'm only stating that because I want you to see how I see these things when I see them or when I hear them. They're like that. So it's like it's almost like you close your eyes and it's that really strong memory that's so alive that you can almost smell that person next to you and you can see them. So the way this story happened is I was having a moment. This was a long time ago. Not a bad moment. I think I was watching TV or something, but something just in my brain, it happens. It's like, psst, hey, you know, like that. And I saw this woman, Lydia, and they have names too. I don't have to work to name my characters. They have names. And so this woman, Lydia, kneels down before her son and is telling him, but it wasn't real. It wasn't real what you saw, you know? Mm-hmm. And he says to her, because it was it's kind of like the whole thing happens. Like, oh my God, what if you woke up from a coma and your whole life wasn't real? Oh my God. And then boom, Lydia shows up and says, you have to let her go. She wasn't real. And he says to her, but mom, if you woke up tomorrow and someone told you I wasn't real, would you stop loving me? And that is the whole crux of why I wanted to tell the story, where the whole story came from. The inspiration for this story was that moment of, do you let go of something that you believe is so real because someone else doesn't believe it? Because love, you know, have you seen the movie Interstellar?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That love is the movie. Fourth dimension.
Fourth dimension. I was about to say it. Nolan.
Yeah.
Christopher Nolan is the apex of the thinker that I want to be. Like, I look at him as a storytelling guru. Like, he is so far beyond me. I feel like a grunt in his army. Does that make sense? Like, it's like, I get it, but I'm not nearly there. He is just such a brilliant mind and a brilliant heart. And that man believes in love, let me tell you, because look at his stories. But love is the fourth dimension. And I was going to say, that's kind of how I felt. But this was 20 years ago when I had this idea. And it just came from that moment. Would you stop loving me? If someone told you, but you knew that I existed, you had all this time with me and everything in front of you is telling you that none of that was true. Could you cut me out of your heart? And her answer is no. Right. So that's the only way to relate to what he's going through. And from that, I built the whole story, which, and then, you know, there was this movie called Frequency, by Toby Emmerich, who another genius. And did you see that? It's Dennis Quaid. Uh-huh. And so I already had this whole story and I'm thinking, oh my God, this is, you know, nobody's going to buy that. And it's a coma and blah, blah. And then Frequency comes out and I'm like, it was a magnificent turning point for me in the way that someone could approach storytelling, because to me, I was young, you know, so it was so different. I was younger than I am now. It was so different than anything I had seen to that point. And then there was Last of the Mohicans, which has this amazing, epic love where he is this man dedicated to this life and he meets her, you know, he meets, what's her
Madeline Stowe.
Yes, Madeline Stowe. I was trying to think of her name, Madeline Stowe, because wouldn't you follow her off a cliff? Hell yes.
Well, that movie's crazy too. And just, you know, from a screenwriting standpoint, there's no dialogue in the last like 15 minutes.
And you don't need it.
No, because the score is great. Hans Zimmer's
score. Oh my God. It's a Trevor. Oh my God, I can't believe, but it's on my, I listen to that all the time.
Is it not Hans Zimmer that did that score?
No. God, it's Trevor, and I can't believe I can't believe I don't remember it. But
no, you keep going. I'll look it up.
Promontory, the climb to the promontory. That's the song. It's like dun, 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 and it's like, like you're squalling. It's just agony, and it's just visual and audio. You know, and you're in it, and Trevor Jones. There's no dialogue, and it is, to me, that is the pinnacle of filmmaking, because you don't need it.
Mm-hmm. It's
just, and you're there, but you did need everything that came before. If you didn't have the movie that came before, that moment would not mean what it means. So I don't want to diminish the movie, but that movie, those two movies. And when he looks at her, and I'm going to tell you something really stupid too. When he looks at her and he's like, you know, you stay alive, I will find you. I'm like, oh my God, yes, 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 yes.
Yes, Daniel Day-Lewis, yes.
Yes, and then it's kind of, some of that, I think, energy is brought into this story. You stay alive. I believe you're here. I will fucking find you, you know? And then there's that, this is stupid song, Smoky Mountain. No, it's not stupid, it's great, but Ronnie Millsap.
Yep.
So there's this song called Smoky Mountain Rain that really, when I was a kid, really grabbed me for some reason. And it's not even about what I thought it was about when I was a little girl. You know, I thought it was this kind of this magical, I've always lived in this cloudy, foggy, cozy dream world that I see the real world through. And I was hearing this song and it's like, he's headed back to Tennessee because he's got to find her. And I'm like, the find her thing always stuck with me. And all of those distillations that come into me as a writer and a creator, they distill down to this one point where I forget the moments until you ask the question, what did you think about? What was the actual inspiration? And I'm like, well, let me think about that, because there's a story, but then how did this story structure itself in a way that became the fairy tale that it is? And it's all these things that I took into myself and loved and spit them back out in a different way, which is what we do. You know, we take in, we inhale what is around us, and we exhale something a little bit different, you know, that has more of us in it, I think. And that is kind of how this came around. I went on a rant about
something. That was a good rant. And
I'm telling you, it happened.
I am a cinephile. Anytime we get to talk movies, I'm good. but I wanted to talk also too, though, Rachel, one of the things about what I love too, and I know you, Mickey, you wrote the part, Dr. Benefield says it about, you know, the brain is capable of you know, incredible things. And, and there's so much we don't understand about consciousness in the brain. And one of the things I found interesting, and I always think it's interesting whenever it's brought up, is anytime somebody's witness to, you know, the unexplained, let's say, how they justify it. And I'm wondering, so let's say there was another chapter at the end here. And I wonder, you know, after witnessing sort of what they witnessed in the end, and, you know, she was flatlined essentially, and she was walking to the light, you know, just to talk to Laura, and then she comes back, you know, for someone like Dr. Benefield, who's obviously, you know, her career is based in science, and what's your thinking there with that character, and maybe just how the book approached, you know, the subject of brain damage, and how we, you know, how we're able to perceive things that happen that we don't really have an explanation for, even though we fully admit we don't even understand how the brain works.
That is a really great question. And as you were saying that, I honestly thought about like death.
That's what this is about.
Absolutely. And I remember my grandma passed away when I was like in sixth grade, and I went to bed one night, and like about a week after she had passed away, and she literally came to me in a dream, and I could smell her. Like she was there with me. And I remember we were like outside my elementary school, and like I remember laying my head on her chest, and I said, like, "Mom really misses you." And she just patted my head and said, "I know, baby, it'll be okay." And like, just like moments like that, just where things just are completely unexplained. Like my grandma was there that night. Like, and I believe that, like, deep in my soul,
right.
Just like these moments that are completely unexplained, where, you know, you can connect with past loved ones. You can connect with, you know, there's something that we just don't, like, we're not able to put our finger on. We can't fully encapsulate, but we know and we feel it, and we can sense that it's real, or that there's something more. So that's always really cool.
Yeah, and well, part of that too is, as humans, is like we see something, we feel the need to have to
explain it.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's part of our God complex. You know, I think there are many of us who don't want to believe there is something bigger, powerful, different, strange there that is different than we are, and that might exert some kind of influence over what we're doing. Personally, I believe in it 100% because I don't think that we are an accident. I can't. No coincidence. And we cannot be just a happenstance, because then why aren't dogs humans? Why aren't that, you know what I'm saying? Like, why don't we all have this sublime consciousness that allows us to create and build lives and homes and careers? Dogs can't do it. Cats can't do it.
Don't ruin dogs by making
them. I love them. But when a dog builds me a house, I'll be a little, you know, I'll feel a little differently about it.
They can pay the rent once in a while.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, please. Feed yourself. So I strongly believe in a world. I don't know what it is, and I don't mind not knowing. That's where I come from. It is, absolutely. And feel free to any listeners to mock my belief in it. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So I fully believe in something different. It's like in 5 feet apart, when she's talking about Abby being on the other side. I can't believe I really loved writing that moment between how they feel about death, and Will represents the realists, I guess you would say. He was like, I think we just blink out. And Stella says, no, we can't, because she was too alive to be gone. And I do believe that is a truism in my world, you know? And so, there's this yearning for something bigger and different, and then there are people I think who want to think that they are the gods of their own lives, which, fine, be the god of your own life. I'm the god of my own life, but I also don't know what the fuck is going on outside of me, and I'm okay with it being something I can't touch or explain, as long as it's there. And if it's there, I'm willing to wait to see what it might be. And I kind of feel like at the end of the book, first of all, let me say that there is, from the original script, there's a syndrome called solipsism syndrome. And it is when a person
it's so abstract, but it's when a person believes the world they're living, that they created it, that everything in their world is only in their world and they created it. And there was a version of this story where that came into play as a scientific explanation for what was happening. But you also knew that it was not really that. Benefield was just sticking a name on it, you know?
Right.
But I took that out because I'm like, I don't want this to be tried. I don't want to try to explain it. I want to leave it open so the reader can decide, do I believe this really happened to him? Like, we know Marley is real and we know that the stories were told and we know that, you know, how they end up, but do I believe that the fantastical part of these things are happening in their minds, or are they just wanting them to be real and they've just found each other and they're going to figure it out? But to me, and I think there are enough seeds and moments in the book that, you know what I think, when he gives her the pearl, you know, I think that is the connection. That is the love that's always going to bring them back together, that was there before they met in that coma world, and it'll be there after they leave it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you made the right call there, because, like, you know, like, that would have planted a seed and
right.
And it would have created maybe doubt, but what the worst crime it would have done, I think, is dilute the second.
It would have given people permission to not believe it.
To not believe in love.
That's right. And I'm like, no, you're going to fucking, if you hate this book because you don't believe in love, that's why, but I'm not going to give you permission to say, oh, well, it never really happened.
Good call. All right, let's get you out of here on this one, since it is being optioned, or will be at some point.
Yes, it is.
Okay,
we're underway.
Have they casted?
Oh no. Okay, so now we're talking modeling. We're talking movies.
Yeah.
screenplay. No, what happens first is, and again, we've talked about this. It's just a backwards. The way that we've done 5 feet apart and all this time is, you know, the books were based on screenplay pages, and usually the book would be written and then it would be optioned and then the screenplay would be written right in that order. But I will be rewriting the screenplay, because now it will go into Lionsgate has bought the rights to the book and they're buying a new screenplay, and they'll give notes and they'll have ideas, and it will go into what's called development of the screenplay. So we go into development, we produce a new screenplay, which will probably be very close to what is on the page and what is, you know, things that are already there, because we do want to say, we want to have fidelity to the story. But we also want to give it a movie life. So this is where I open it up and they come in and say, what if we do this? What if we do that? What if this, but still stay true to what we want to the story that we want to tell. So we're in development, you would say, right now, but that would become, yeah.
I call in development the left row in IMDb Pro.
We're a little closer than that. Yeah. We're a little closer than
okay.
that.
Okay, so I was just going to ask, because, you know, got to ask a fun thing, is who's your Kyle, who's your Marley?
I love Taylor Russell for Marley.
Okay.
I can see her face. I hear her voice. Every time I watch her in an interview, I melt a little bit, because I'm like, oh my God, there she is. There she is. You know, have you seen her? She was Escape Room and Waves. That's when she was in Waves. Did you
okay.
see that movie?
I had to look her up, but yeah. Now
that is here, one of my, here, that yeah. movie, yeah. listeners, if you have not seen yeah. Waves.
I've seen Waves.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay. That was one that really just, I left my soul in the theater. For you about, know you know, I had to go back and get it.
Funny at Waves, what's funny about Waves is it did really well up here in Toronto for TIFF.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of just petered out after. I remember it was early. They got a lot of really early excitement at Sundance, I remember.
I saw it in Austin at the film festival down there, because I was down there doing some panel work.
It got a lot of buzz coming out of TIFF too, I remember. And then it just kind of fizzled out. It was also a really good year for film, but...
Well, I think it's unfortunate.
It was great, though. I agree.
See more of those movies, and well, I'm also in West LA, so that's what we go see. And my theater was packed, so
right.
I was really happy. But right. I had seen Escape Room, but she is Marley 1,000% in my mind. I love her, Kyle.
Oh, she's Canadian.
Aha! She's Vancouver, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, listen, I've done my research. I'm like, you got to have her.
Nice.
And, but Kyle is kind of, funny enough, Marley is the most solid character to me. Mm-hmm. Kyle is really strangely an open book.
Okay.
There was a guy, I sent you a picture, right, Rachel? And he was
Alex,
a little...
Yeah, I agreed with you. Alex Fitzallen, he was in the society. There we go. Yeah.
And then I thought, I was like, this is what Kyle looks like. You know, and then for Sam, I sent you a picture and it's a guy, but he's a little too old, but someone like him, like, okay, so put Sam to me is Charles Melton. If he weren't already in
for
The
sure.
Sun is Also
for
a Star sure. and he's way too big to be a supporting role, I think. But I will find a way to ask them to beg him to please play Sam because I think we need his charisma. We need him in this movie. And I would like to see. Do you know who Betty Gilpin is?
Yep, from Cheers or from not Cheers. Glow. Frasier.
No. That's Perry Gilpin.
Oh, okay.
Betty
sorry.
Gilpin is a little younger, and she's a little young. I would have to age down Benefield a little bit, but my gosh, she would. Be
Oh my
fucking,
gosh, she would be perfect.
Thank you very much.
Oh my gosh, I love her in Glow. Yes.
Uh huh.
Yes.
Yes.
For sure.
Yes,
she is a fucking force. I'm obsessed with her. I want her as in every one of my stories from now on. I have things I want to write just so she'll be in them.
I love
it. So Benefield, her as Benefield or as Lydia. But she's a little Benefield. She's got to be my Benefield. She has to.
See, now I want her as Benefield and Alison Brie as Lydia now. So let's just get the we'll just get the glow cast.
Yeah, and then we need to have a fight scene. We'll have Lydia and Benefield like have this big fight.
We'll have the whole glow cast. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to tell you. Is you really loved Lydia and Benefield. And Rachel knows this because she got to read all of the draft. What Rachel gets is the real inside story of all of the story we could possibly tell. Because I tell hundreds of pages, you know, of screen, and we pick and choose. But there is a moment in one of them where Lydia and Benefield face off. And I really love these two powerhouse women. Mm. And one of them is saying, it's a little bit of a different version. And but she's saying, you know, Benefield was kind of, I don't even know if I should go here. It's definitely a spoiler and probably don't publish this for you, but there's a moment where Benefield's encouraging him to believe in Marley because she thinks it's going to help him get better. And all she cares about is him getting out of that bed and walking. And Lydia confronts her about that and says, why are you choosing to help my son believe in this thing that's never going to come true? When you just, and Lydia, and they go back at each other in this really great powerhouse scene. And then, you know, a long time ago, when I was originally casting that in my mind, 20 years ago, when I had that scene, it was Helen Mirren and Mary McDonald, you know, in that scene.
Right.
Which would have, you know, I wouldn't cast Mary McDonald as Lydia, as Kyle's mother anymore. But I mean, I'd cast her as anything sure. ever. Yeah. I'd cast her as Marley if I could, because she's amazing. You know what? If Betty Gilpin were... is she not Marley 1,000%? She's also Kimberly. She's also Kyle. She's also.
She could play them all. We'll just see a one act play.
I just think she's amazing. But yeah, Taylor Russell. I'm putting this out there, which means it won't ever happen. But I absolutely, she is Marley in my mind. I have my heart set on her.
Right. No, that's a good call. Just looking her up now. Yeah, that's perfect.
Oh my God! Just watch any interview with her and
There you make it happen. We're going to will it. We're going to make it happen.
Do it.
Yeah, manifest
yeah.
it.
Put it out there. I believe in, yeah.
I can't thank you guys enough. This was super fun for me.
I'm sorry if I rambled on. And
no, that's beautiful. Are you kidding me?
Cut and paste a lot of my
No, I'm not going to touch tripe. A thing. I'm not touching a thing. It was perfect.
Oh, good. Leave all the hem and haws. And my, what was the question again? After I go off on a 30-minute rant about something completely unrelated.
No, it's it was all amazing. I really enjoyed it, and again, yeah, I really did enjoy this book. And
thank you.
Yeah, like I said, cried a couple times, and I'm with you 100%. It's like, let's turn the TV off. You know,
or turn it on. Just
shut it. Or sure, whatever. But you know, sit down, get into this book, try and. Turn all that stuff off. You know, get this book in your hands, and I know you're gonna. If you don't feel a little bitter about the world and yourself after all this time, then you're a lost cause.
Thank you. I hope everybody on the planet feels just like you.
That would be a lot of books sold, eh? Seven billion. All This Time is available now. I personally don't like to give the crazy bald guy any money. Where would you guys like All This Time to be purchased? What's your choice?
Well, Barnes & Noble has an exclusive edition. It is exclusive with something special.
Okay.
So if you want to get that one, I definitely would recommend it. Okay. Because it's so hard to physically shop these days for a lot of us, I would, if you don't want to give the bald guy money, give it to Barnes & Noble, because they do have an exclusive edition that has something a little special in it you might want to see if you're a fan of 5 Feet Apart.
Perfect. All right. I will.
And that's all I'll tease.
No, that's more than enough.
But you have to order the exclusive edition.
Sure.
I think there are two, so make sure. I don't want you to get one and say, this is the same shit as the other.
She lied to me. Yeah.
Looking around for the extras.
Continue to be safe, the both of you, please.
Thank
we need you both. We need storytellers more than ever.
I'm down with everybody just fucking being happy and watch some happy things.
Yes.
Please put good people doing good things for other people. And I'm telling you, your heart will change. It just happens. You can't help it. Love begets love. And that's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of a better way to end it. Thank you so much, guys.
I really had
a great time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
There you have it. Another episode of Everything is Canon all wrapped up. A huge thanks to both Mickey and Rachel for taking the time to speak with me. All This Time, as you heard, is being turned into a film, and I look forward to connecting with them down the road. With so much rage and bitterness happening right outside our front doors, a little escapism now and again is the fuel we need to combat the fear and the hate. When people everywhere, even the government, are telling us how and who to love, then a little reminder that they're wrong. That you love the one your heart's with isn't a bad thing. As Mickey says, these are the things that make life worth living. All This Time is available now wherever books are sold. Head on over to Barnes & Noble for an exclusive edition. And as always, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you choose to listen. And head on over to cinelinks.com for the latest movie, TV, books, and gaming news. Bye for now. Our time is coming.